Well, I want to welcome you to the Engine Room, and we're in a series called Seven Sins God Hates in the Church. And the theological framework that we've been using to understand how this series works is Proverbs 6. Proverbs 6 exposes sins that destroy a community from within itself. Pride, lies, schemes, false witnesses, and conflict. And in the middle sits a sin that we rarely name but often commit. Feet that rush into evil. And that is the sin of complicity. It's joining a rebellion that you didn't start, absorbing somebody else's bitterness, letting their grievance shape your spirit, and mistaking pride for discernment. Complicity feels like loyalty, but Proverbs says that it's a spiritual blindness. And Proverbs 6 diagnoses the disease, but Numbers 16 shows us what happens when the disease goes untreated. So we're going to be in Numbers chapter 16, and Numbers 16 shows how fast a rebellion can spread, how easily good people can get swept up in it, and how seriously God responds when unity is attacked. Here's the big idea that I want you to wrap your mind and heart around tonight. To join rebellion against God's leaders is to rebel against God himself. Now, before you get sick at your stomach, before you go into like Google mode or whatever, hear me out. And let's start in Numbers 16, beginning in verse 1. And let's talk about the roots of rebellion. Number one, the roots of rebellion. Korah, son of Izhar, son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and certain Reubenites, Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, On, son of Peleth, became insolent and rose up against Moses. With them were 250 Israelite men well known in the community, who had been appointed members of the council. They came as a group to oppose Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far. The whole community is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is with them. Why then do you set yourselves above the Lord's assembly?" And when Moses heard this, listen to this, he fell face down. The roots of rebellion. So Korah's rebellion, what, by the way, is a very well-known phrase. Korah's rebellion began way before this confrontation with Moses. It was brewing in his heart, shaped by pride, which is the very beginning of all of these terrible, deadly sins, shaped by pride and a subtle dissatisfaction with the distinct calling that God had given him. So Korah was a Levite. He was a priest in the tabernacle, which means that he was part of the tribe that God himself set apart for sacred service. The Levites lived and they ministered near the holy things of God. And this is a privilege that no other tribe enjoyed. But we got to remember, as we're building this theme, that self-exaltation or pride can distort even the highest calling. Instead of seeing his role as a role of grace, Korah began to believe that he deserved more authority than the person that God had clearly assigned. And pride always shrinks gratitude. Eventually, it made Korah believe that Moses was withholding something that rightfully belonged to him. And so this inner rebellion spread outward as Korah gathered 250 well-known leaders. And these were respected men. But remember this, influence does not always equal discernment. Good men follow the wrong person, not because they're evil, but because they're undiscerning. And undiscerning leaders are the easiest prey for a prideful person with a compelling grievance. They allowed Korah's grievance to become their own grievance. They embraced Korah's narrative without seeking the Lord, without testing what he was saying is true. They sided with pride, and we see no record of them getting together and praying. And that's the essence of complicity. Remember, tonight we're not just talking about pride and self-exaltation. We're talking about complicity. You join somebody else's rebellion without examining your own heart or the truth. And Proverbs warns us that this is one of the sins that God hates. Why? He hates feet that rush into evil. Why? Because it multiplies destruction. So their accusation is the whole community is holy, right? That sounds very spiritual, but it was deeply manipulative. You see, all rebellion disguises itself as noble language. It paints itself as righteous, but it flows from the heart of self-exaltation. Pride undermines God's order by elevating personal grievances above God's design. So, Moses immediately senses what's happening. And what does he do? He gets out a sword and he cuts their heads off. Nope. He goes up to the top of Mount Sinai and asks God to throw down lightning bolts. Nope. What does Moses do? He does what every true godly leader should do. He falls face down. He does not defend himself because the rebellion is not against him, and he knows this. The rebellion was not against Moses, and Moses knew it. It was against God. And here we see Moses as the most humble man on planet Earth. That's what God called Moses. God said that Moses was the most humble man on planet Earth, and here we see why. And it reminds us, and it gives us a heart of gravity to be very cautious to join in rebellion against God's leaders. Because to join in rebellion against God's leaders is to rebel against God himself. And it always leads to destruction. Now let me just say, what do you mean God's leaders? The people who are clearly called by God to an office, who are living in alignment with the scriptures and with the qualifications, the legitimate qualifications of being in spiritual leadership. And in our day where so many spiritual leaders fall, it's so hard for us to not want to move this out of the way. But we can't. Now, let's keep going. Number two, we see the call to separate. So, verse 16, Moses says to Korah, after he's praying, "You and all your followers are to appear before the Lord tomorrow. You and they and Aaron. Each man is to take his censer and put incense in it, 250 censers in all, and present it before the Lord. You and Aaron are to present your censers also." So each of them took his censer, put burning coals and incense in it, and stood with Moses and Aaron at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And when Korah had gathered all his followers in opposition to them at the entrance to the tent of meeting, the glory of the Lord appeared to the entire assembly. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Separate yourselves from this assembly so I can put an end to them at once." But Moses and Aaron fell face down and cried out, "Oh God, the God who gives breath to all living things, will you be angry with the entire assembly when only one man sins?" Then the Lord said to Moses, "Say to the assembly, 'Move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram.'" So, let me try to explain this. So, this is the turning point in number 16, and we don't have time to go through the whole, every single verse tonight, so I'm just giving you sections. Korah's rebellion is no longer just private discontent. Now it's become a movement. He assembles all of his followers and he publicly opposes Moses and Aaron at the very door of the tent of meeting. I mean, you can't get more audacious than that. And Korah is not content to be wrong alone. No, he's got to have an audience. And rebellion thrives on performance. Remember this. So he demands attention. He wants everybody to pay attention to him. And he feeds on the energy of the mob, of the crowd. And yet Moses remains calm. Instead of reacting to what Korah and all of these dissenters are saying, he falls face down with Aaron. And in his prayer, God speaks, and God says to Moses, summon the rebels to appear before the Lord. And so now all of this has come to the light, and the presence of God descends upon the scene in unmistakable glory. The people can see with their own eyes that God himself is evaluating this rebellion. And the first words from the Lord are chilling. He says to Moses and Aaron, separate yourselves. God, let me just stop here. God's call to separate is not a suggestion. Okay? You might want to write this down. Standing too close to a divisive spirit will shape your soul long before you notice it happening. Standing too close to a divisive spirit will shape your soul long before you notice it happening. To stand with the rebellious is to share in their fate. So God then narrows the judgment and instructs Moses to tell the people to move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Now let me just tell you, this is a picture of God's mercy. He gives the assembly a moment to step back before destruction falls down. Moses and Aaron, what do they do? I'll tell you what I would do. I'd be like, yes, Lord. I mean, I wish you would just vaporize all of them. But I'm not Moses or Aaron. You know what they did? They fell face down again in humility, showing what true spiritual leadership looks like. It's marked by humility, not pride, not retaliation, not justification or defensiveness. And you know what they do? They intercede for the people who have wronged them. That's what Jesus looks like. And they plead for the people to God because they understand something that many people forget. Rebellion's fallout always touches more than just the rebel leader. The whole community becomes vulnerable. This passage teaches the modern church a very critical truth. The voices that you stand near will determine the direction of your heart and even possibly your destiny. So God's command is clear. Move away from rebellious voices, from divisive spirits, from prideful movements. Do not align yourself with what opposes the Lord. Because to join rebellion against God's leaders is to rebel against God himself. And then lastly, we see the judgment on complicity. So we're talking about the sin of complicity. Now we're going to kind of zoom down a little bit to verse 28 of Numbers 16. Then Moses said, this is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these things and that it was not my idea. If these men die a natural death and suffer the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about something totally new and the earth opens up its mouth and swallows them with everything that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the realm of the dead, then you will know that these men have treated the Lord with contempt. As soon as he finished saying all of this, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them and their households, and all those that associated with Korah, together with all their possessions. They went down alive into the realm of the dead with everything they owned. The earth closed over them, and they perished and were gone from the community. At their cries, all the Israelites around them fled, shouting, the earth is going to swallow us too. And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who are offering the incense. This judgment is terrifying because it reveals how seriously God takes rebellion against his established order. Moses makes the situation unmistakably clear, as good leaders do. They provide clarity. If these men die ordinary deaths, then God did not send him. But if the earth opens its mouth and swallows them alive, Israel will know that those men have treated the Lord, not Moses, the Lord, with contempt. So Moses gives Israel a test that nobody can manipulate. I mean, either God intervenes or he doesn't. And you know what happens? God intervenes immediately. Now, God did not judge them quickly. He judged them after repeated warnings, repeated chances to repent, and repeated invitations to step back. The ground splits apart, creation responds, and the rebels descend alive into the realm of the dead. Their households went with them, not because God is careless, because rebellion always sweeps others into its consequences. Prideful, divisive people never fall alone. Families, friends, and followers all get dragged into their collapse. Then a second judgment falls on the 250 men offering unauthorized incense. Fire from the Lord consumes them. See, their sin was not initiating rebellion. Their sin was joining in it. This is the heart of complicity. God holds all participants accountable, not just the leaders. And this passage confronts today's church with a sobering truth. Rebellion still destroys, even if the ground no longer opens up beneath our feet. Destruction now takes the form of fractured relationships, weakened testimonies, lost vision, poisoned unity. I want you to get this tonight. Churches rarely fall because of one divisive person. They fall because others join that person, because they're not tethered to truth. They're tethered to emotionalism and sentimentalism without being sober-minded in the things of God, the truth of God. And the consequences of the sin of complicity are so real. The judgment is still real. And the text calls every believer to fear the sin that God hates, because to join rebellion against God's leaders is to rebel against God himself, and that invites the discipline of God. So this chapter stands as a warning to us, to God's people, and to every generation, because the sin of complicity is subtle, but its danger is anything but subtle. Korah's story shows us that one man's pride can become a crowd's rebellion in just a matter of moments. And a crowd's rebellion can bring devastating consequences. He calls us to be vigilant, to be discerning, to be humble. You and I, if we belong to Christ, we're not free to just join every grievance or align with every frustrated voice. We need to be very sober-minded in this. The people that we stand near shape the posture of our hearts. That's a fact. God calling the Israelites to move away from the tents of those rebels is not just an ancient command. It is a command for the church today. We've got to be a people who know how to separate from the complicity of sinful rebellion, not just against leaders, but against God. And that means we've got to guard our hearts against bitterness. We have to guard our hearts against pride. We have to guard our hearts against contempt. It means that we got to refuse to participate in slander or gossip. It means stepping away from people who stir up conflict, who distort the truth, or who rely on spiritual language to mask their own pride. And separation is not isolation. It's just obedience. And God only calls us to separate from what he intends to judge because of its evil. And at the same time, this passage calls us to imitate Moses. Instead of reacting with defensiveness, Moses got on his face and cried out to God. Instead of building up his own following, he didn't do that. He sought the Lord. Instead of responding to pride with more pride, he walked in humility. Moses did not fight rebellion with rebellion. No, Moses fought rebellion with prayer and then trust in God's perfect mercy and justice. And that's the posture that we've got to have today as God's church. We've got to be the people who pursue reconciliation. We've got to be the people who refuse to rush into evil, to just blindly accept what people say, even if we know them well and it doesn't bear witness in our spirit. And we've got to be people who choose humility over pride. So number 16 is a reminder that God is holy and that the church is his. The church does not belong to me. It does not belong to you. It belongs to God. And unity matters to God far more than I think we even understand. Rebellion destroys. Complicity destroys. But Christ builds. Grace builds. Forgiveness restores. Christ unifies. And Christ calls us to choose the harder, sometimes, and holier path. In a world full of Korahs, Christ calls his people to walk the harder road, the road of humility, the road of falling face down before God, the road of unity, the road of reconciliation, because only that road is the path to experiencing the blessings and the power of God and his local church.